Yeah, the late Bobby Womack helping out on the vocals there. They always have guests with them. Gorillaz, they're playing Dublin on Saturday the 9th of June at Malahide Castle. And one of the guests that Gorillaz have had in the past is Marky Smith, who died at the age of 60 this week. And he fronted the legendary band The Fall. All those who like their indie music from a bunch of decades will know all about Marky Smith. And a lot of other people won't. But anyway, I'm going to give you something now because we've gone back way into the past with a shovel, a digger, as I mentioned earlier on to Connor, to sort of find this piece here, which I haven't listened to, but others have and said, yeah, it might be as bad as I think it is from my point of view. But anyway, it doesn't matter. We're going to go for it. And this is Marky Smith in the studio many, many years ago, 1984 or something like that. Oh my God. And Brixie Smith as well. Now, Brix was his second wife, was it her first wife? I don't know. But she was also a member of the band at the time as well. And they're here. So this could be pretty unique. Here goes. Will I go for it? Will I go off and make a cup of tea and not? Okay.
Well, like, The Fall have been around now for a long time. You formed, say, in 77. You had your first thing out by 78. So what do you think it is that's so special about The Fall that so many other bands sort of have fallen by the wayside, pardon the pun? Like, is it, do you think, something like your willingness to experiment against trends sort of while partly creating new ones?
I don't know. I don't know. I think it's just the bloody-mindedness, really. A lot of it. You know, a bit obsessed with it.
Well, what about the lineup changes you've had recently in the band? I mean, is that something that you want all the way, or is it something just big-headed people and you just had to get rid of them?
Yeah, I mean, I find it hard to work with people I sort of detest the core of, you know. So the band's pretty stable. Been pretty stable the past sort of year, really. Brix is the sort of newest addition to it, and that's like for about 6 months, is it?
Yeah.
Well, do you get annoyed if people say that, like, well, The Fall is Marky Smith? I mean, is The Fall Marky Smith? Is it the institution of Marky Smith?
Yeah, I suppose it is. Yeah, well, I'm the only one answer.
Well, like, what about the other people then? I mean, how democratic is The Fall?
Oh, it's very democratic, yes. It's just, they all get the fair say. I mean, they're that sort of people anyway. I don't think they'd be quite interested in all this stuff. Don't blame them either, you know. Do you get me drift? I mean, like, you know, the guitar players and bass players are not prophets or anything, you know. They're just good lads, you know, that's it. Great, you know, I mean, I love them very much. And
well, then how about The Fall 1984? I mean, like, still the album sleeves, say, in terms of that sort of an image, are very different than most things you see. Sort of the production is often quite what some people would call, say, sloppy. You can be quite erratic on stage. The sort of that restless irritation of Marky Smith comes through everything that you do. I mean, is there any sort of a... Can I call it an image in any way? I mean, even if it is a non-image, if you know what I mean, like, in that a non-image is an image.
Yeah, but it's not a planned out one. I was saying this afternoon. The image seems to have changed. You know, it changes about every 6 months. Certain the way it's portrayed in the press and stuff. You know, like, I remember when we started out, we were very we always turned very left wing and all this stuff. You know, and that's like nobody dares say that anymore and stuff. You know what I mean?
Well, if you say you've had changes, I mean, like, could you say that recently that the biggest change has come in The Fall? I mean, that there was a radical change and you've done all you could as The Fall, say, 78 to 82 or 83, and that sort of everything now is really quite different in a more of a commercial way even.
Yeah, well, I just thought it was about time we sort of... were properly recorded, not produced in a way, just properly recorded. You know, and it's about time we sort of took time out to sort of get the facilities to do that properly. I mean, we still use first takes and things like that, but we needed somebody who could, like, capture our sound, you know, the sound that we can get on a good day.
Well, I would have thought that would have been part of what The Fall wanted to do in the past. I mean, if I say that, without meaning this in any bad way, that The Fall's sound was one that sort of thrived on the importance of its own ugliness in some ways, that, for instance, that might be at odds with trying to get a hit single, say.
Well, I can't reply to that, really, because... You know, I'm not ashamed of anything I've done. It's just, hit singles and that. I just don't understand the thought behind it. Everything I do, I always think, it, you know, naturally, I think it should be a hit single. I mean, but I know damn well it's not going to be. No.
Well, what about The Fall live on stage then? I mean, like, for instance, if there is no sort of direct image that you can put down in words that you do on stage, at least that A Fall live performance is, and that what you play is just all that matters. I mean, like, what you do live on stage could be looked upon as something as being detrimental towards this business of you saying, for instance, in the studio, you'd like to get a better sound, you'd like to get the better equipment and all the rest. Like, is
no,
that
I,
not
I didn't
notes?
Say that. What I was saying was that... in the past, a lot of the Fall records were vastly inferior to what we were doing live. That's the way it was. I mean, that is the way, that's the mechanics of the profession. The studios are, they're built by mechanics, you know. And I always said that, you know, the best sounds are probably hidden in studio carpets somewhere, you know. Or foam sort of Dolby noise reducers on things. So, you know, and so when you go in the studio, a lot of times you've got a choice between a very, very good sound or a very, very bad sound. Well, all I ever wanted was to get the sort of Fall's uniqueness recorded onto vinyl, which I think we've done with this LP.
Well, what about the audience at a Fall live concert? I mean, would you rather that they were sort of pro or anti a lot of the things that you would do? Would you rather, like, I mean, as opposed to sitting there passively and taking it all in and clapping at the end of every song?
I don't know, it's not my business to think about that, really. I'm just doing my best, you know.
Well, what about, is it not your business, for instance, on stage, like, for instance, that the fact that your lyrics are, let's say, in terms of the Fall's whole projection, are important in some ways, and that you can't hear the lyrics a lot of the time when the Fall play live, when a lot of bands play live? Yeah. I mean, there are certain things that people use on stage that don't get these things across. Do you think you have more options, maybe, to get that across?
Yeah. I mean, people know the songs before they're recorded, I know that, for sure. And, I don't know, I think that's part of the whole fun of it, is that the fact that the lyrics are unintelligible. I mean, it makes people more interested, more stimulated by them, I think.
Do you feel the dance...
Because the way I write is like a unique structure, you see, so it's not like... You know that a lot of people work out lyrics by the way they're structured, you know, if they know it's first chorus, and the rhymes in it. You can usually work out what the song's about anyway without even knowing a word of it. Do you get my drift? Where with ours, you can't. So when you hear a word, it is very exciting.
Yeah, I get your drift in terms of what the Fall were, but is that the way the Fall are now, in that, like, for instance, if a lot of the writing credits are down to Brixie as well now, mm-hmm. that, for instance, that you might have been getting a bit too literary or too precious about your lyrics, and the way Brixie write might be a bit more sort of straightforward, and therefore that's been a help to you to keep it from one big sort of chunk of prose-type writing?
Yeah, musically, yeah. Yeah, she's made a big difference.
So what about you, Brixie? Where did you meet this guy? Did you really meet him in a bar when he looked like as though he was totally washed out because he just had a bad Fall gig?
Yeah. No, it was like the best gig I ever saw of any band ever. And, you know, because before I hadn't even heard of the Fall, you know. Yeah, I actually did meet him in a bar, and he had a bottle of beer in each hand, and he was stumbling in like clothes that looked like they'd been slept in for 10 days. But he was still cute.
And did you, I mean, like, you were with the band as a guest first, and now you're a full-time member.
Yeah.
And how long have you been a member of the band?
About since after Perverted by Language, right after that.
So how do you see yourself in terms of the band, say, on stage? Like, do you see sort of contrasting or complementing maybe the whole Fall sound?
I think complementing and contrasting, I think both are good things, you know. They don't clash. I worked very hard to, like, spin a very fine web around everybody without, like, you know, dominating in any way, and just, like, embracing all the other musicians musically. And I think I definitely contrast because of the way I am, where I'm from, what I'm like, the way I look, you know, and my whole style of playing. But it also complements because I worked very hard to do that.
Well, what about complimenting in other ways? I mean, as husband and wife, I mean, you say, like, you come from a different... I mean, like, Russian aristocratic descent from L.A.
Ooh, I don't
How
think
about that
I
one?
Should say that. Well, that's to be debated. Yes, I'm very different, but, you know, I left home at 16. I had a hard life. I worked very hard, and here I am.
And you were in a band before that. I mean, what were Burden of Proof like? What kind of band were they?
Well, I played bass in that band, and I did the lead vocals. And it was like The bass was very rumbling, and I played only with my fingers, and the guitar was very harsh with lots of distortion, and the drums were only played on, like, mostly toms. And it was sort of like poppy and a lot of rockabilly, a lot of kind of country influence, and also sort of garage sound, you know. Can't really go into it, but...
Well, Mark, what about the thing, for instance, that... Let's take the trouble you've had with some record companies. I mean, you were in with Rough Trade Records, you left them and you went back to them. Now, why did you go back to a record company that you had obviously decided weren't going to do you much good or weren't going to promote you properly?
I get the impression Dave's after me tonight.
He's doing his homework.
Yeah, it's a good point. Well, nobody had ever us at the time. They asked us back. They asked us, we didn't sort of go, you know.
Well, I presume the last day.
I think it was a very bad decision, to be quite honest. I mean, it was a
to
bad,
leave.
No, to go back.
Oh yeah.
You know, definitely because we went back and it was considerably worse. I found. I mean, but at the time it wasn't. You know, we had a manager then, and it was her decision. You know, I mean, I don't blame her because as I remember distinctly, see, Camera just went bust, but we left them a week before they went bust. We could see it coming. So there's not much you can do, you know. I mean, if somebody rings you up and says, come back, not even knowing that you're desperate, it seems a good thing, you know.
Well, what are Beggars Banquet doing for you that the others didn't do? Is it just sort of press promotion would be one of the major things, would it? Because I've certainly seen the name fall in terms of ads, like for the last few singles, Creep and Oh Brother.
Well, I don't know. I mean, Beggars Banquet might have the faults. I don't know. I haven't seen any of them. What I like about them is that they're very straight with you, you know.
Well, if you want to sell more records, do you feel that you have to sort of make...
It's not that I want to sell more records. It's just that I won't be due, you know.
Sure, but like, I'm not saying that that's the driving force behind what you do or anything in 1984 as opposed to previous years, but there is a bit of a difference. And, like, if, for instance, you meet some bands who are successful, do they come to you and sort of say things like, look, what we had to do was terrible, I really hate this, you know, while they've got £1 million in the bank behind your back as well?
Yeah, yeah.
Do you find you met those people? I mean, like, at gigs, for instance, did bands like The Smiths from Manchester or bands like Echo and the Bunnymen or whatever come along and start these sob stories knowing that you wouldn't take any of their nonsense and knowing that they had to sell out to do what they did?
Yeah, I mean, that's how it appeared to me, you know. Maybe I'm a twisted person, but... yeah, definitely, yeah. I mean, it's all gone... it's all changed that now because I've made my feelings felt, so... I did an interview last week and this bloke was saying every group I interview that's smaller than you really admires you and worships you, and every group that is bigger than you hates your guts, you know. I mean, it's like a prickling of the conscience, I like to think. But I mean, you know, who cares anyway?
Well, you have an image, say, of, to put it bluntly, a difficult person. I mean, like, there's stories that go around of bands who go to record companies to get a record contract, and they sit around the manager's, at least whatever, at the guy's table, and they say, well, at one stage he says, well, who are your favourite bands? And somebody would say, blah, 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 and somebody would say, well, I like The Fall. And even that, they say, whoops, if this guy likes The Fall, he must be dangerous, we'll draft him, sort of thing. Have you even heard that? Because, I mean, I've heard that.
I've heard that, I don't know, it sounds a bit far-fetched to me.
I mean, do you have that much influence? I mean, surely you realise that The Fall have definitely been an influential band over the past few years.
Yeah, of course, yeah. Whether that's a good thing or a bad thing, I don't know. I mean, I don't particularly feel flattered to see people imitating me on stage. In fact, I get the opposite. I get very annoyed.
Is it simply that you just refuse to tolerate any sort of nonsense and that compromise just doesn't necessarily come into it in terms of trying to... say, get this album across.
I don't think about it that much. It's just the way I'm built, you know. I have a sort
but
of
surely
moral,
after 7 years,
code of my own, you know, and if people don't, you know, don't follow it, that's fair enough.
But surely after 7 years, say, of 15,000 album sales, as opposed to some of the people that you see who are selling nothing at one stage and now are selling 100,000 or 200,000 or something, does that not irk you to a point?
Well, I'd say it did, like, 6 months ago, yeah, when I had a lot of debts and stuff, you know. But, I mean, I don't want to be rich. But, I mean, I do want to be rich, but, I mean, I think there's better ways to do it than being a group, for a start.
Really. Well, we're running very short of time indeed, and, Mark, all the nice things I was going to ask you, I can't. I have to wait till after the programme. Listen, just one thing. There's another man outside there having a cup of coffee, and that's Gavin Friday. Now, how did you get him on two of the tracks on the new LP, or why? Well, I remember once reading that you said something about the Virgin Prunes once, where you said, if that's what improvisation on stage is, to hell with it.
Well, it started with Mark played me this song called Sandpaper Lullaby, And I thought it was the best song I'd ever heard, and I cried when I heard it. I was so moved. And I thought Gavin's voice was just wonderful, and I thought that the contrast between Mark's voice and Gavin's voice would be beautiful. So I asked Mark if he would like to, and he said he would, because it was something he sort of muttered about before. And then we wrote him a letter, didn't we?
Yeah, well, that was all a joke about... we used to criticise each other in the press. It's like a common agreement.
Going back to some rough trade days now.
No, common agreement as a joke on the press.
Yeah. Well, what about... There's one thing about The Fall that a lot of people say, I can't get into The Fall for whatever, that I think a lot of people miss, and that is the humour. Do you think a lot of people miss the humour in The Fall, or do you see yourself as putting across a certain sense of humour?
Yeah, I wouldn't like to... I'm glad people don't notice it. I mean, you know, people... I like seeing people... Like, sometimes when we're playing, just one person will just start laughing out loud. I think that's great.
Well, I've just laughed at this, Mark. This is terrible. We've literally got about sort of 15 seconds left, so I'm just going to have to say goodbye to you and have a wonderful time on stage tonight. Mark and Brixey, The Fall playing tonight at the TV Club in Dublin, playing in Belfast as well tomorrow night, and The Real Wild West are in support tonight. So thank you very much. Thank you both very much for dropping in.
Okay.
And cheers. Next time it'll be longer.
Well, that was absolutely brilliant. I don't know what I was worried about. And Marky Smith wasn't bad either. Okay, that is Marky Smith and Brix Smith as well. And I'm going to play you some... I'll tell you what, I'm going to give you some more from Brix in a second or two, because we talked to her just very recently, actually. And we were speaking about The Fall just a couple of years ago when I interviewed her about her book called The Rise, The Fall and The Rise. But I'll give you a tiny little bit of music from The Fall here now. That is the late Marky Smith. And this is The Fall with Totally Wired. My God. And by the way, those gigs I mentioned at the TV Club tonight, you're a bit late. That was 34 years ago. They're not on tonight. And the Real Wild West are not playing tonight. Okay, fair enough. That was just part of that interview. Actually, as I say, 2 years ago, Brix was back here. I was talking to her about The Rise, The Fall and The Rise, which is the book she brought out, a kind of a autobiography thingamabob. And just here she is from that interview from a few years ago, talking about her days with Marky Smith and The Fall. Let's take this. When you met Mark Smith, you were 20, he was 26. 6 months later, you got married, and you were a member of the band as well.
Yeah, correct. Yes,
and was this an ultimate thing for you, to become a member of The Fall?
No, I never intended to be a member of The Fall, nor did it even ever cross my mind, because The Fall was already like a finite functioning recording band. And the last thing I would ever think is that they would want, you know, California American girlfriend in the band. But when he met me, he heard some of the music that I'd written, and he actually brought me over to England to try and get me a record deal that he could produce, you know? So I was always going to do solo music with him sort of as my Svengali, but I never ever ever thought I'd join The Fall.
Okay, and what about the writing between the two of you? I mean, like, there was great songwriting chemistry between you and Marky Smith.
Yeah, amazing. It was almost like, you know, I really believe things are fated in some way, and I you know, we just came together, and although we were very sort of polar opposite people and from very different backgrounds, you know, some magic happened when we wrote together. And I learned so much from writing with him, and I'm sure he learned a lot from writing with me, you know, and we each brought different things to the table. And when they came together, they just made a fantastic meal.
The ever-changing lineups, the fact that you'd go on tour sometimes and nobody would speak to each other, and very seldom would it be the same lineup from one whatever to the next. And the rug, as you say, is always being pulled from underneath you.
Yeah, that's true. I mean, Steve Hanley was a constant. I mean, there was a period of time when even he was gone for a while. Mm. But, you know, he remained as the bass player in The Fall for 20 years. And, yeah, the rug was always pulled. It was mostly drummers that we'd change, it seemed like. I mean, Craig Scanlon was in it for a long, long time as well while I was in it. So it was the drummers. And sometimes the lineup would change between the sound check and the gig, you know, which was extremely disconcerting.
And what about Mark himself? I mean, like, by 1989, say, it was all over between you and Mark. It was over by the end of the 80s.
Yeah, it was dead.
It was dead. I mean, you were in here one night, by the way, on this program. You were with Mark, and Gavin Friday came in to meet you.
Oh, I love Gavin Friday.
Yeah, and the photograph is up there. And the two of you look like happy as whatever. That, I don't know when that was. It must have been about 84, 85 maybe. I don't know. Whenever you played in Dublin. And I mean, like, you seemed to get on really great. The two of you were hilarious in the interview. It was really funny. It was good times.
Oh, good. good. I don't really I don't remember that much about that. I remember playing in Dublin though, which I loved. We got on fine. We, you know, people's relationships, they sometimes have a finite period of time and they last for however long that they last. And when it's over and it's broken and it's unfixable, you have to move on.
And when I mentioned earlier on about songwriting, that doesn't mean that even though the collaboration songwriting was good, that doesn't necessarily mean the publishing rights were equal.
No, I'm... You know, mostly I did fine because I wrote a lot of the music. And lots of times I would write all of the music and bring it to Mark. And so it would just be Smith and Smith and be fine. But then later on, certainly my second stint in the band, they were very, very creative. Publishing assignments going on where sometimes I'd find my name on a song which I really had nothing to do with, and other times I'd find my name off a song which I completely had everything to do with. So you just never know. You never know.
In general, like before the fall and during the fall, what was it about the band that like you would, like, first, like why was it, do you think that, and everybody knows this, John Peel's favourite band of all time kind of thing? They, like, the fall were uncompromising, they were abrasive, they were mysterious, but like, wasn't it really like one of the most functional bands ever?
I don't know, because I've been in other bands, and yes, it's the most dysfunctional band I've ever been in, but I've heard stories about other bands where it's equally as dysfunctional. You know, it functioned the way that it did. Mark was definitely the leader, the dictator, and that was the way that it worked.
Yeah.
And I think that's what's made the band last for so long. Yes, it's a completely different band now, but it still sort of has the same ethos. And, you know, if that's the, there was no, it was not a democracy and there was no chance of it ever being one.
Indeed, that's Brixie Smith sounding very different than she did 32 years ago. So, and that's, so do I. Sound very different than I did as well. Then, fair play, Brix, indeed. Yeah, Marky Smith, who died at the age of 60 this week. He was the Fall, the legend of the Fall, and there was another 65 members in the band at some stage along the way. And as I say, where are the Fall types? Where are the Marky Smith's types? Well, millennials, where are you? 51552 is our text.